This deep dive is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frinnis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about digital products and services in calendar weeks 26 and 27. Frinnis is a B2B market research company that supports enterprise product teams with building feature-by-feature competitive intelligence that shows exactly how their product stacks up against the competition. You can find more info in the description.
So true.
Right. So welcome, everyone. I want you to imagine, just for a second, that you are upgrading your factory to a fully automated, like, state-of-the-art assembly line.
Oh, nice. Sounds expensive.
Very. And the machines, they are incredible, right? The conveyor belts are moving at absolute warp speed. But there is one tiny problem. You forgot to double check the product blueprint.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So your brand new, highly efficient factory, it doesn't just make a single mistake. It efficiently mass produces thousands of completely defective parts before you even, you know, realize there's a problem on the floor.
That is a terrifying thought.
It really is. And I bring it up because that is exactly what the tech industry is doing right now. We are taking a stack of insights curated from the top digital products and services conversations across LinkedIn over the last 2 weeks, and we are uncovering this really startling reality about building software today.
Yeah, the overarching theme here is, well, it is a massive irony, actually, because AI has made building software cheaper and faster than at any point in human history, right?
Absolutely.
Faster than ever.
Look, this hyper-acceleration, it hasn't made product management easier. I mean, it is actually pushing the whole discipline into this crisis of purpose.
Right.
Because the bottleneck in software development, it is no longer code generation. The tech is just accelerating, which means your margin for strategic error is basically shrinking to zero. We are seeing a complete shift in what it actually takes to build a successful product.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if you are listening to this on your commute right now, or maybe you are prepping for a roadmap meeting, you are probably intimately familiar with this tension.
Oh, they definitely are. Right. Like, you probably have an executive breathing down your neck asking, you know, where are the new AI features? But you know that your core users are just begging for, like, a reliable, bug-free export button.
Just give them the button.
Exactly. The daily reality for anyone working in tech is changing so rapidly. And it starts with this fundamental insight from Joy Mumman. She pointed out that AI has entirely shifted the development bottleneck.
Yeah, I read her post. It is so spot on.
It really is. I mean, writing the kind that used to be the slow part, right? The labor-intensive part. Now, the true bottleneck, it isn't typing out the syntax. It is deciding what is actually worth building in the first place.
And Guy Pistone, he takes that bottleneck shift and applies it perfectly to your factory analogy.
Oh, how so?
Well, he warns that AI basically accelerates whatever you put in front of it. So if your engineering teams can suddenly ship entire backlogs in a fraction of the time, vague or poorly researched requirements, well, they become incredibly dangerous.
Because you get there faster.
Exactly. You aren't just building a slightly off-target feature anymore. You are producing these overbuilt, irrelevant features at this terrifying velocity. Pistone makes the case that this AI-accelerated engineering, it exposes weak product requirements.
Wow. So it takes what used to look like an engineering performance problem and reveals it as an organizational design problem.
Exactly. If you feed a bad strategy into a fast machine, you just get to the wrong destination quicker.
It is like giving a teenager a Ferrari, but no GPS. Sure, you are going 150 miles per hour, but you might just be driving off a cliff faster.
That is exactly it. And preventing that mass production of defects is why Michael Wall argues for this strict readiness gate.
A readiness gate, okay.
Yeah, and his perspective is this much-needed reality check for the industry. He basically says, look, your customers do not care about your AI strategy.
They really don't.
They don't care about your tech stack. They don't care which large language model you are paying for. Mm-hmm. And they definitely do not care about the size of your context window.
Right. Like, they do not care how many PDFs you can cram into a prompt.
Exactly. What they actually care about are their own bottlenecks, you know, their squeezed margins, their painful manual processes. Wall argues that if a new AI feature doesn't significantly simplify a workflow or, you know, eliminate a manual step, it isn't innovation.
It's just bloat.
Exactly. It is costly bloat disguised as innovation.
And we saw a really brutally honest application of that readiness gate from Elena Leonova with her product, OneRank.
Oh, yeah. Her story was fascinating.
Right. She decided to run her own AI feature bets through this massive pressure test. And her screen was just devastatingly simple. She said, if you delete the word AI from the feature description, what gap is actually left?
That is such a good test.
It is. And when she did that to her own roadmap, she realized that putting a chatbot on top of a data decision tool didn't actually make the user's decision any better.
Right, because it just added this conversational UI to a task that completely did not need one.
Exactly. I mean, if a user's core job is analyzing data, forcing them to chat with an AI just to see that data, it just adds this useless layer of obfuscation. It just made the screenshot look like it belonged in a 2026 pitch deck.
Yeah, pitch deck features. We see them all the time.
So she killed the chatbots, she killed the summarization wrappers, which, let's be honest, are basically just basic AI models dressed up with a nice interface.
Yeah, totally.
Because she felt they degraded user trust. She only shipped AI that actively did the core job of her product better.
Which takes immense discipline, right?
Yeah.
Especially when the whole market is just shouting at you to include AI everything.
Seriously.
And systematizing that discipline is where Suffolk Erkol's recap of Katerina Korotieva's framework becomes just essential.
Okay, tell me about this framework.
So Korotieva proposed four specific quality gates that teams absolutely must use to pressure test any AI feature before it ever hits production.
Yeah.
This framework, it shifts the conversation completely from, you know, do we have the technical capability to build this, to do we have the business justification to ship this?
Oh, I love that. Let's break down those four gates because I think they are incredibly practical for you listening to apply immediately.
Definitely.
So gate number one is testing for hallucination and refusal accuracy. You aren't just testing if the model gets the answer right. You have to test if the model knows how to say, I don't know.
Which is so rare.
Right. If an AI makes up a metric in a B2B financial dashboard just to please the user, your entire software loses credibility instantly. If it can't refuse a prompt it doesn't understand, it fails the gate.
Exactly. And then gate number two is the trust gap. This one measures the verification time. Basically, can the user verify the AI's output in under 10 seconds.
10 seconds. Wow, that is strict.
It is, but think about it. If a user asks the AI to summarize a legal document, but they have to spend 30 seconds carefully reading the summary against the original text, you know, just to make sure it didn't miss a crucial clause.
Right.
Well, they could have just skimmed the document themselves in 20 seconds. If verification takes longer than manual execution, trust just never builds, and feature adoption will completely flatline.
That makes total sense. Okay, gate number three is the cost of wrong. You have to size the risk per 1,000 uses.
Yeah, context matters.
Exactly. If an AI gives a bad recommendation for a coffee shop on a travel app, you know, that is a minor annoyance. But if a B2B AI miscalculates a compliance metric for a healthcare provider.
Oh boy, massive lawsuit.
Exactly. The inherent stakes dictate whether the feature should even exist. And finally, gate number four is the adoption wall. Will the most experienced veteran person on your team actually use it?
The power user test.
Right. Korotieva targets a 30-day retention rate above 40%. If your power users won't touch the AI feature, the wider rollout is just guaranteed to stall.
What's fascinating here is how these four gates completely redefine the concept of readiness. They aren't about the software being code complete, meaning bug-free and functional. They're about the feature being value complete.
Value complete. I like that.
Yeah. And if you apply these strict value gates to a typical enterprise roadmap today, you are going to kill off a massive percentage of AI ideas very, very quickly.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. If these frameworks are ruthlessly filtering out mediocre AI concepts right before launch, it puts an immense amount of pressure on the very beginning of the product life cycle.
Yep.
You have to figure out what the customer actually needs before you write a single prompt, which leads us to our next major theme, which is product discovery returning to its roots in deep customer value.
And the financial cost of getting that discovery wrong, I mean, it is steeper than ever right now. Joe Caprara shared this incredibly painful but highly instructive story about exactly this.
What happened?
So he spent 9 months building an AI product for product feedback discovery. It was called Epic. And by all traditional launch metrics, it was a total hit.
Okay, sounds good so far.
Right. The beta users loved the demo. They were lining up to use it. The UI was beautiful. But after week one, usage just dropped off an absolute cliff.
Oh, wow. 9 months of engineering time, dead almost overnight.
Dead overnight. Ugh. He had to pull the plug because he realized that once the magic of talking to an AI wore off, the product actually created friction instead of automation.
How so?
Well, Caprara realized that the AI was essentially asking users to become prompt engineers just to log a simple piece of feedback. Instead of saving them time, the tool required users to learn a whole new workflow of interacting with a chatbot.
Right, which created significantly more friction than just filling out a standard, boring web form.
Exactly. To understand the mechanism behind that failure, we can actually look at Janakiram's framework for product discovery. He breaks user input down into three distinct categories.
Okay, what are they?
Wants, needs, and hunches. Caprara's failure with Epic is this textbook case of building for the wants. He listened to what users explicitly said they wanted in those early, exciting demos.
But he missed the needs.
Exactly. He missed the needs, which you only uncover by observing what users actually do, you know, where they click, and where they experience real workflow friction in their daily behavior.
But wait, hold on. If we only rely on documented, proven needs, like, if we only build things that fix existing workflows, doesn't that fundamentally kill innovation?
That is a great question.
I mean, what about intuition? Don't we need leaps of faith to build something truly disruptive? If we just watch what people do today, we'd just build faster horses, right?
That is a crucial pushback, and it is exactly why Janakiram includes that third category, which is hunches. Breakthrough innovation absolutely starts with intuition. The key differentiator is that a hunch requires rapid validation. You don't spend 9 months building a hunch in secret with a full engineering team.
Right. You validate it in days.
Exactly. And Scott Persinger shared a brilliant example of this working perfectly. So he is the CTO at BizTrip.ai, and one of his engineers built a feature that lets users simply drag and drop a screenshot into an AI agent, and it instantly starts planning a business trip.
Oh, that is so cool.
It is highly successful. Users absolutely love it. But as Persinger noted, this feature was never on a formal product roadmap. Never. The engineer built it purely on a hunch, using their own creativity, and they tested it immediately.
Okay, so the goal is to make space for the hunch, but aggressively test it against reality.
Yes, exactly.
And to balance that out, DevShaw shared a highly structured discovery approach called the Problem Stack Canvas. It's basically this 2-hour exercise designed to prevent exactly the kind of 9-month reworks we saw with Caprara.
I love a good canvas.
Right. It's a 5-layer framework, but the absolute most crucial layer for you to apply is layer 4. And layer 4 asks, what is the cost of not solving this problem?
Oh, that is so powerful.
It really is. You have to force the customer to measure that cost in hard money, wasted time, or severe risk. Shaw argues that if there is no measurable cost to the user for leaving the problem unsolved, then it's not a real problem worth dedicating your engineering resources to.
And that concept of the cost of not solving it, it ties directly into Bing Wu's product philosophy.
What does Wu say?
Wu suggests that every single software product you sell is actually two products simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have the deal product.
The deal product.
Okay. Yeah. This is the version of the software that demos beautifully on a Zoom call. You know, it has the flashy AI summarization features. It gets the executives all excited, and it closes the initial sale.
That's true. The sizzle.
Exactly. But underneath that, you have the renewal product. This is the product that has to run flawlessly at 2 in the morning on a Sunday when nobody from your customer success team is around to help the user.
Right. So the deal product gets the signature on the contract, but the renewal product is what stops them from churning 11 months later.
Exactly. And Wu notes that too many of these new AI wrappers are purely deal products. They look incredible during a sales pitch, but they fail the 2 a.m. renewal test because they aren't reliable, you know, they hallucinate, or they don't actually solve that core layer 4 problem.
Yeah, you can win a deal once with hype, but you have to re-earn the renewal every single week with utility.
Yep, 100%.
So if the deal product versus renewal product framework forces us to have this like flawless customer discovery before we write a single line of AI code, it begs the question, who is actually responsible for that discovery now?
Right, because the roles are changing.
Exactly, because the people traditionally doing that job, they're disappearing. Just look at what Claire Vaux just shared about Gusto.
Oh, this story blew my mind.
It is crazy. Gusto recently shipped an entirely new AI-first version of their app in less than 10 weeks. But the timeline isn't the shocker, it's the team composition. They built it with absolutely zero product managers.
Zero.
None. It was just a CTO, a designer, 3 engineers, and Claude code.
And when you look at how they did that, Claude essentially acted as an autonomous junior developer.
Right.
It was handling all the boilerplate code generation, running basic QA scripts, and even compiling the technical specs based on the CTO's direct vision.
Mm.
The engineers weren't waiting around for a PM to write a JIRA ticket, you know. They were using AI to bridge the gap between design and deployment, basically instantly.
So I have to ask you, if engineers can use AI assistance to build features at warp speed, and AI can pull insights directly from user feedback channels, is the product manager role becoming obsolete? Like, are we witnessing the end of the PM?
What's fascinating here is how Akash Tiwari reframes this whole industry panic. He calls the idea of magic AI running on pure autopilot a dangerous hallucination.
A dangerous hallucination. I like that phrasing.
Yeah. Yes, you can feed an AI-generated requirement doc into an autonomous development build, but without strict human oversight, you aren't accelerating your product lifecycle. You are just fast-tracking a catastrophic production outage.
Right, going back to the factory without the blueprint.
Exactly. Tiwari points out that the PM role isn't dying. It is shifting. The shift is moving the PM from being a creator to being a governor.
From creator to governor. That is a massive identity shift for the profession.
Huge.
It means PMs are no longer spending their days just writing endless product requirement documents or, you know, curating JIRA backlogs. Instead, they're designing the governance systems.
Yes, exactly.
They're the ones ensuring regulatory compliance, maintaining the overall architecture integrity, and keeping the engineering team aligned with the actual business strategy. They are managing the AI output, not competing with it for tasks.
Because AI doesn't replace the core product lifecycle, right? It just changes where the cognitive load sits.
Where does it sit now?
The cognitive load moves from generating output, like writing specs or code, to making highly complex decisions. Milanja Makish's interview strategy illustrates this shift perfectly.
Oh, the interview question.
Yeah. Yes. When she interviews product management candidates today, she doesn't ask them about AI prompt engineering or like agile frameworks. She asks them one simple, incredibly revealing question, which is, what product decision did you regret the most?
That is such a difficult interview question.
Right.
I mean, it forces the candidate to talk entirely about trade-offs and consequences. As Makija points out, AI can help almost anyone generate a roadmap. You know, it can summarize 50 hours of user research in seconds, and it can draft a beautiful spec document.
Oh, absolutely.
What AI absolutely cannot do is replace the human reasoning required for a difficult, ambiguous decision where there is just no perfect answer. Judgment is the ultimate PM skill now.
It really is.
We're even seeing platforms being built specifically to support this. Look at Skillvana, created by Mitha Ravi Prakash. It acts as an AI co-founder, but its whole purpose isn't to generate code. It's designed to pressure test a product manager's judgment.
I think that is brilliant.
Yeah, it actively challenges assumptions and maps out trade-offs so a PM can defend their strategic decisions to leadership.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the need for that defensible judgment explains so much of the current dysfunction in the tech industry right now. Melissa Perry shared some truly alarming survey data regarding organizational alignment.
What did the data say?
So 62% of product managers reported that a lack of clear AI strategy is their biggest daily challenge. However, when you ask C-level executives the exact same question, only 19% feel that way.
Wow. That is a 43% gap between the executives funding the product and the people actually building it.
Yes. The strategy usually exists at the top, right? The executives and the board, they are having these high-level conversations about AI investment and market positioning. But that strategy is never translated into the daily decision-making frameworks that a PM actually needs on a Monday morning.
They are just left guessing.
Exactly. The PMs don't know the rules of engagement. What data should we feed the AI? What user workflows should we leave alone? The translation layer between executive vision and engineering execution is completely missing.
Which brings us to the new identity of product leadership. Scott Lowry uses a brilliant analogy to describe how this gap must be closed. He says that the modern VP of product, or chief product officer, shouldn't act like a feature curator who just manages a list of customer requests.
Right, no more suggestion boxes.
Exactly. They need to act like a private financial planner managing a high net worth capital portfolio. In a SaaS business, your R&D budget is your investment capital. Your products are your portfolio holdings.
That is a great way to look at it.
Right. The product leader has to sit across from the CEO and balance the portfolio, you know, identifying the high-risk AI growth bets, maintaining the stable core features that drive renewals, and having the ruthless discipline to pinpoint the legacy features they need to exit entirely. It is pure capital allocation.
And you cannot allocate capital effectively if you are drowning in tactical feature requests. The AI era requires product leaders to step up and own the strategy, design the governance, and basically take absolute responsibility for the ultimate business outcomes.
So what does this all mean? If you take away one thing from this deep dive, it's that AI is not a magic shortcut that allows you to skip the hard, messy work of understanding your customer.
Definitely not.
It is actually a magnifying glass. It exposes weak strategy, it highlights vague requirements, and it brutally punishes poor organizational design by building the wrong thing faster. But for the product teams that adapt, AI rewards deep customer understanding, strict value gates, and impeccable human judgment.
This actually raises an important question for you to consider as we wrap up today. We've spent decades judging the success of technology by its ROI, you know, return on investment. Did this software save us money or make us faster?
Right, the classic metric.
But as we move into an era where AI doesn't just automate data entry, but actively recommends actions, coordinates agents, and shapes organizational strategy, well, Vanya Sahi suggests that perhaps ROI is dead.
ROI is dead, wow.
Yeah. The next massive competitive advantage for your company won't come from building or buying a slightly larger language model. It will come from building better decisions. The true metric you should be evaluating moving forward is ROD, return on decisions.
Return on decisions.
Exactly. Does the AI you are implementing consistently and measurably improve the quality of human judgment in your organization?
Return on decisions. That is a completely different way to look at your roadmap tomorrow morning. Let's go back to that image of the upgraded factory we started with. The AI gives you the state-of-the-art machines and the unprecedented speed. But your product strategy, your strict value gates, and your human judgment, well, that is the blueprint.
Without it, you are just mass-producing defects.
Exactly. But with it, you can navigate this new landscape faster and more effectively than ever before. If you enjoyed this deep dive, new deep dives drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on ICT and tech, artificial intelligence, cloud, sustainability and green ICT, defense tech, and health tech.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for joining us, learning with us, and sharing your time.
Don't forget to hit subscribe so you never miss an insight. Keep building, keep questioning, and we'll see you next time.